beaming into your mind like a ray of cosmic revelation, smashing through the mainstream like a comet of prophecy. You're listening to Planet Verloc, your podcast for everything super psionics and magic tech. Yes, welcome to my show. Tonight's podcast, Psionics, the Coalition of Magic, and a story about a personal friend. Content with my life abroad. In an international school at the age of 6 or 7 in the Middle East, in the land known as Arabia, my life took an abrupt change of direction. The day I foreboded the coming of had arrived. I was then to begin packing and preparing for a return home to my country, and this meant also a return back to public school. What I began with in the beginning of this podcast here is a continuous pattern throughout my life, set in place by the fates. Yes, the all elusive, omnipresent fates of the Matrix. It has long been my childhood ambition to defeat these fates, defy the gods, and it has been also my secret for what I have brought about in the world up to today. I shall disclose with my audience and colleagues tonight my intentions played out, at least in part, and I shall deliver this adventure and the telling of my relationships to both the visible and invisible world. And the best telling of this journey shall be partial in the narrative, so as to allow for your own thoughts to manifest meaning that you may discover herein on Planet Verloc, Psionics and Magic Tech tonight. So without further ado, let us begin. I believe that the secret to a better world resides in the gathering of similar interest but unique persons. Nowhere are we more unique than in the quality of our way of interpreting information, responding to impulses, and shaping our projections. Language, defined by its roots and patterns of consistency in a dynamic way, allows us to realize the thinking of a collective or of a people, a culture, a country. From the Mayans, Aztecs, to the Grand Pyramids at Giza, and even trekking further back in time to the drawings sprawled across the walls of caves and caverns of our prehistoric ancestors, all communicated in images, hieroglyphs, drawings, the Chinese and Japanese kanji characters. All of these languages are preserved in their respective imagery. Imagery which may be very important to understand in a way, because there is a buried secret under the waves of the ocean off the coast of Japan. Cyclopean steps and tiers, structures, a lost civilization in the forgotten fluids of space-time. Let us consider the language of the Japanese as a clear depiction or example of this universal language that even the Aborigines of Australia believed was the images impressed upon us in our dreams from the universe, or rather something like that. Now, I'm not tying the Japanese language to the Aborigines. I'm speaking about imagery coming to us from the cosmic all. Well, in Japanese, the root of the kanji, their characters for writing, let us take the root of the kanji for cooking, for example. We will begin with the element of fire. Seems practical and logical enough. So, for instance, we have the kanji, again, an image made into a character. And that kanji of fire is pronounced as he. When we use a kanji for cooking, we again see the original he kanji for fire in this new kanji along with new components called radicals, or as they are referred to in Japanese as hen or bushu. In a magical sense, this altering of the character is something rather like crafting a spirit glyph. We have the elemental image as a foundation, and then we are transforming the meaning with new components. And to me, it rather seems that what we are working with here is a language of archetypes. Well, in a manner. Just to sort of illustrate my point, we can take the word he for fire and transform this word into taku for cooking, as in to boil, yaku as in to bake, broil, or roast, and so on down the chain. I'll provide for those interested a link to various fire radicals just for your curiosity and, well, to give you the imagery that you might work with in your exploration of magical thinking. All of this may seem rather a simple muse to some of my listeners, but consider where all of this magic stuff began. Moreover, consider where Mr. Science spawned from. Metaphysics is the father of physics, albeit I'm sure physics was important in the initial discovery of rubbing two sticks together to make a fire. But it is unlikely that man discovered this technology without intervention. And this intervention may have come to our ancestors in the form of imagery. Yes, as it was transliterated from scripture in the Bible, God created man in his own image. And there is much to be said about this and similar statements of wisdom in the writings of the great magician Franz Barden, as well in the writings of my good friend and brother magician Dr. Abreu, and his colleague S. Robb, and other great colleagues, which I will be podcasting about and introducing to my listeners, these great thinkers and pioneers in magical philosophy, in the very near future. Folks, the world we live in today, the ordinary and seemingly non-magical world of muggles, is taken for granted. I've always believed that when Dr. Scientist, Mr. Science, happens upon a chance encounter with Mr. Magic, that the two might pause in stride to reflect upon their beginnings, and know that the two schools of thought are not so incredibly otherworldly or unlike. Many believed concepts in life are rather like this, wherein their components, which distinguish them, are entirely variable, and while distinctly separate in recognition and practice, science and magic share similar attributes, and this is because both are siblings of the same father, which is indeed the imagination of humankind. And the imagery which comes down the pipe into our minds from intuition, like a conduit of astral cables reaching out through the akasha and the ether, or the ether, connecting us to the cosmic all, spiraling and whirling throughout all infinity and eternity. Ordinarily, we exist in a rather elaborate bubble, my friends, something to us which seems like a lifetime, and yet, it is to the totality of the all-attentive universe but a blink of an eye. Within one of these fragments of light, captured in the Akashic retina, is my moments in time spent with my student and later my good friend, Mr. Kawasako. I hope many of you may appreciate my telling of this unfolding of two lives in the grand gallery of the cosmic all, for my friend is now and has been long deceased. But he entered into my life with answers to my character, and then left me with more questions about my soul. Kawasako-san was an engineer and the owner of his father's company, a factory which operated processes for sintering metals and for automotive industries and some other manufacturers. We met at a meeting. I found myself in the middle of a group of people whom I did not fully understand on many levels, but I was accustomed to having new experiences, being my background where I grew up as a small boy in a foreign land of Saudi Arabia, and so Asia was merely a different flavor of unique and unfamiliar experiences and people that in some elusive way was in actuality familiar to me after all. Sitting around a table on the floor of a tatami carpet-floored room is where I discovered the friendly smiling face of an elderly gentleman who I came to know as Kawasaka-san. Kawasaka-san was adamant to be introduced to me and became friends very eagerly. I was nervous as a younger person, having at that time preferred to occupy my free time with more reclusive and independent activities. However, my new friend's very different background from my own interested me, and I readily accepted his invitation to meet with him at his family's home. Well, to make a long story short, we had some sake, and for a time I had forgotten his name, but not his face. I remembered his face. When Kawasaka-san and I sat down in his home, he showed me his traditional room arranged for family prayer, as his family were Buddhist, and then brought me over to his modernized living room, and later we had refreshments in his dining room, served by his good wife. Kawasaka-san took time getting to know me with some of the expected questions, but it was not these things which really interested him. Instead, and at length, he brought out a very special sword, and standing properly, he unsheathed the blade in one graceful move. His arms did not tremble or shake as I had expected. Such would be the case with a very elderly gentleman, but no, his limbs were sturdy and hard practice, and so I admired the poise and pose for a time, and then at length my friend laughed. In the course of our many conversations, we came to understand some of our differences rather well. I believe that Kawasaka-san envied my chaotic and free lifestyle, including my past experiences. Yet he respected my difficulty in trying to start up a business, albeit a very, very small business in a foreign land. I, in contrast, envied Kawasaka-san's well-structured or apparently organized life because for me, I saw in Kawasaka-san a stability that was not common in my own upbringing, with promises of a final resting place, assuredness of a retirement, and a confidence in where he rightfully belonged. And yet, this was not so. Indeed, my friend, Kawasaka-san, felt a desire to be free of his own social confinements. To better understand him, at least insofar as I gathered, I accompanied my friend to his company and spent an entire day observing the processes of sintering metal, and then afterwards we took a break for another outing in downtown where we ventured to an art museum and then a traditional coffee house. I realized that in my friend's ordinary schedule, that after his work he might have meetings or drinks with managers and staff, which is very common, albeit expected in Japanese companies, but then he would be at home the rest of the time, expected to be and behave a certain way as head of household, a father, and the truth seemed to me that my friend desired the privilege to choose for himself his associations. His closest friend had been a doctor who lived down the street, but the two very rarely ever met or conversed, so I gathered my friend was incredibly desirous or perhaps a little lonesome for a conversation that was, well, my friend enjoyed speaking to me of subject matters and experiences which were outside of the ordinary box. Kawasaka-san craved for something different, which could distinguish between all that he had known and all that was expected, and then delve a little, perhaps, into some more fun pursuits which might free him, for a time, from the usual expected television entertainment at home, or the occasional game of Mahjong with his doctor friend. Oh, and by the way, I had been invited to join my friend and his new friend to play a game of Mahjong, which I was very excited to do, but due to some changes, I had to leave the country for a time, which we'll share in a moment. Now, I admired Kawasaku-san's courage for expressing his true views with me openly and privately, for which I kept his private enthusiasm in hopes a secret between friends. And by the way, Kawasaku-san understood me when, on one day, I disclosed for a few hours my difficulties in school growing up overseas or in America, and I spoke to my friend of what I believed was mind control, social conditioning, and how I believed this influence differed vastly from traditional influence. To this, we discussed philosophy for 3 hours, and then we returned to our ordinary and expected lives. Kawasaku-san said that he understood me. It was clear in his eyes, and from Kawasaku-san, he was, well, felt very similar about his experiences with the expectations of his peers and colleagues. So I smiled and said my last goodbye for that year. I had to leave the country for some years for business with my family. And when the day of my return, eventually to Japan, came, well, my friend had become very old and his mind was not the same. Kawasaku-san honestly did not remember me. Vaguely, as he said in a synchronicity, "I know your face, but I can't remember." Neighbors and friends told me that he could not remember. And this realization was a bit sad. But then I decided to follow up with my old friend, and although he could not remember much about me at all, I walked with him, and he had a new little dog he was walking on a leash, and so we strolled by the grand canal and river, by his home under the glorious green mountains across valleys and bridges. Kawasaku-san could not think on the same level of intellect as we had once spoken, but he felt a certain comfort by my accompanying him and his dog on this walk. I saw him twice more after that, and then my friend died peacefully in his home. I may tell this story in full perhaps another time, but it is at this crucial point of realization in this journey where I believe Kawasaku-san's life and our story branches outward into the lives of other people and other stories. For I believe the stories of our lives are indeed living things, and eternal in the Akasha and with the cosmic all. Today I meet more people from all over the world through, without leaving my home. Folks from Norway, India, England, France, Japan, Mexico, Brazil, and various parts of the United States. What brings us together is, as I have pointed out in my opening of my podcast, is a similarity of interest and a uniqueness of character and, well, various other qualities. I think also those of us who decide to stick to these new relationships that we develop have an inner will to see a bigger picture unfold. And it is through the imagery of the journey I share with my colleagues and brothers of magic that the true language of the universe, which binds us in a fellowship for discovery of new horizons, a better potential for civilization, and considerations that are rarely brought to the public light, but which are indeed answerable to magic. And this is eternally ours. You must understand me, my friends, colleagues, and students. Our interest and passion in magic and psionics crosses all boundaries. Psionics is not subject to politics, to race, ethnicity, gender, or any other society or societal construct is concerned with. Indeed, psionics is our way of life and our technology for making the world a better place. Much like my friendship to Kawasako-san, what we have in common, despite our obvious differences in culture and appearance, is an open mind and some real-life experiences which allow us to explore together new possibilities where the average person might overlook. But of course, we all don't have to be average persons. We can change. A little time spent learning a new language, or perhaps writing a pen pal, or joining a club, is at least a good start in the direction of forming new and wondrous relationships across the seas of disharmony which distract us from mind-to-mind relationships and those of similar heart and spirit. I will leave you now to consider and reflect upon your views of people in the world who appear to be different from ourselves and whose cultures are of a different world entirely. Think of what could be accomplished through a new world psionics order. We could communicate minus all the nonsense or bigotry and all the other things that slow the greater majority of the world from ever achieving spiritual and magical breakthroughs. Together, we will transition from the realm of theory and make a journey into the world of practical application. A coalition of magic is coming to the Vrilok New Thought Movement. Yes, a moment of silence for William Walker Atkinson, the initial founder of the New Thought Movement. You know, there's one more fact that I wish to disclose to my listeners before I conclude tonight's podcast, and this is that my friend Kawasako-san passed away in 2015, which meant I spent about another year until 2016, nearing 2017, when I returned to America and had for a time mourned the loss of my friend, but I see images of my friend in my mind's eye now and then on occasion, accompanied by sensations, smells of foods we ate at restaurants, or also, interestingly enough, the familiar incense that his wife would light and burn in their home, and these things come back to me now and then, reminding me to work with my prayer board. The miraculous prayer board, which I believe was my mission in part while in Japan, to discover certain aspects about the analogous elements in nature and spirit, particularly the spirit of the land and people in Japan. And so then, in a way, I don't believe I truly ever lost my friend or any other friend. You might check out my book, Psionic Necromancer, to learn more about my meaning in this pursuit of eternal existence of our disembodied personalities. I will leave my listeners to your own thoughts. But if you enjoy these podcasts, please patronize my psionic shop at vrilok.com/shop. So until next time, as always, always keep the magic high. This is Tom Vrilok, signing out.